How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I am joined by my special guest, the very handsome, local and talented musician, Matt Monta.
Hey, hey.
And we just watched Commando, part of our action movie series for August, crossing over with Struck a Nerve, the pop culture mixtape this month. Commando, one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's most ridiculous films. Not very subtle, if you can call any of his films subtle at all. But certainly a fun one. Right off, followed Terminator shortly after he was starting to blow up after Terminator, Conan the Barbarian, movies like this. Just a real, like, probably one of the most fun Schwarzenegger films, really, in the grand scheme of things. So, Matt, how have you not seen this?
Well, I was actually thinking about that. When I grew up, I had two older sisters, and so they weren't really into action movies.
Okay.
It wasn't something that I watched growing up, and my, you know, my parents weren't like, let's go see Terminator or RoboCop or anything. So, like, action movies are something I discovered more or less, like, in college.
Okay.
Cobra being one of my all-time favorites.
Cobra's a great one.
Cobra's fantastic. So, you know, I never really got acquainted with a lot of action movies. And this one, kind of, in my mind, being a little obscure, I'd never even heard of it until you told me. I, of course, haven't seen this one either.
Yeah, it's definitely not at the top of the list of Schwarzenegger's more known stuff, like Terminator and Conan, stuff like that, kind of gets pushed towards the top with that. So I definitely, this is one of the more understandable ones that I can definitely get why people haven't seen it. Now that you have, what do you think?
I thought it was incredible. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was, you know, the action scenes, like you said, were just totally over the top. I think there were, like, in the last action sequence, I noted that only two guys Schwarzenegger didn't kill.
Yeah.
He jumped off the balcony, like, slammed them into a table, and then left. Like, just
left
them there.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone else, he shot up to pieces, but those two guys, he left. There was a good car chase. There were lots of every car that turned over, with the exception of one, exploded. It was action packed. There were some good downtime moments that I thought were like, God, why is this happening? But then it would end with an explosion.
Yeah,
sort of out of nowhere. But what I did appreciate, and I noticed this, and maybe I'm not hitting up a lot of action movies these days, but there's a lot of diversity. Mm-hmm. Like, there's women who are playing central roles. There are African Americans. There's Asians. A lot of the Hispanics, I think, were relegated to being
like the villain,
the foot soldier
role
type guys. But you know, it was like South Americans and I guess it could be kind of for that role, the villain role kind of stereotype. But I think all villains to a degree are
certainly.
But even the other villain was British.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just a bunch of American white dudes or just, you know, Stallone just shooting up a bunch of Vietnamese people.
Yeah. Let's talk about that villain right now, because I think he is one of the just most ridiculous villains in action movies. Primarily because the entire time I'm watching him, all I can think of is Freddie Mercury from Queen. Like, with the mustache and the mesh overshirt, he's very not intimidating.
No, he was the most out of shape guy in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the guys who are getting shot up in the action sequences, even the mall cops,
were
fitter and seemed more capable of doing damage to Schwarzenegger than Bennett did, period.
Yeah, Bernie was the guy who played, like, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head I've seen him in, but yeah, like, he just, this is probably the most mismatched fight in a Schwarzenegger movie ever. Like, I'm hard-pressed to think of any time where Schwarzenegger has fought, like, a main villain, and it's been more apparent that it's like, there's no way Schwarzenegger's not gonna win against this guy.
It's like when Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out, and it's like, oh, he's fighting Barry Horowitz, I wonder who's gonna win this one.
Well, on top of that, like, Bennett, like, weirdly sexualizes his violence.
Yeah.
Which is a very bizarre acting choice. Like, the director, like, let the camera roll and was like, is he like getting a boner, like thinking about like stabbing John Matrix with a knife right now? No, let's let it roll. Is he pulling an O face right now when he pulls out that gun? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he. I don't think he committed to it enough that it seemed believable, because it's like, yeah, he's an out of shape guy.
Yeah.
He wears a very, you know, not a very intimidating outfit. Like a mesh tank top.
He looks
like a shark tooth necklace.
He looks like an extra in a gay bar scene.
Yes.
Like that's Bennett's wardrobe.
Pretty much. So there was nothing really that stuck out to me for Bennett other than that sort of sexualization of his urge to kill. But even that, it was just like,
it was very phoned in and not committed to.
Yeah, I mean, there were things he probably could have gone further with, but with, you know, having a kid involved, I don't know if the directors at that point,
yeah, you
know, like,
you want to watch
it, or if the guy who played Ben is like, oh, I have this great idea, and they're like, yeah, try it, but just don't freak the kids out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, it was, to be fair though, in the final sequence, I wasn't expecting a hand to hand fight.
Yeah, yeah, and you shouldn't. Like, there's no reason you look at Bennett and go, oh, yeah, no, he can go toe to toe with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Like, no, he absolutely can't.
No.
But somehow they write it so that he holds his own for a little while.
Well, they're in the same unit together, so I can only assume that Bennett had the same type of training.
Yeah, well,
John
Matrix did. Schwarzenegger trained him. Like, he was one of his subordinates.
So wouldn't it be that, like, the subordinate's, like, bigger and stronger than the master? Isn't that how it's normally supposed to go?
You would think that's the way it's supposed to go, but nope.
Bennett really let himself go.
Yeah, well, and then the other guy, like, the first guy that you see killed in the opening of the film, the guy taking out his trash, like, he's just, like, some 50-year-old, like, just very average-looking dude. It's like, that dude was in, like, a black bag operation? Like, he was special ops?
Well,
like, when? 40 years ago?
I didn't understand. Looking back on it, I didn't quite understand the opening sequence, because it was like Cook and usually some other random people just randomly killing other people.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it seemed like he was just playing bad practical jokes. Like, oh, the trash is here. Nope. Bam, 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 bam. Oh, we're shoot you up.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to take this fishing boat out to catch some fish. Nope, I'm going to blow it up. Do you want to try this car out? Yeah, sure. I'm going to drive it through the front window of the car dealership and kill you.
Yeah, that
like,
made no sense.
Price.
I was like, wait, is he one of the... Because I forgot about that sequence. I forgot about that entire opening.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense that, like, they killed the other members of his unit.
Was that who they were?
Yeah. They were other dudes in Schwarzenegger's unit. And, like, the end game was to get Schwarzenegger to go to whatever, to Val Verde, and to basically wage a one-man war against whatever person that established a rule there. So I don't understand why killing the rest of his team was even necessary.
So when did they say that was his team?
It's very briefly. Like, I barely caught it. It's when the general shows up to his house in the helicopter, and they leave the dudes there. That's why they leave the dudes there. They're like, oh, other people in your team are being killed. We're leaving him here. I was like, the bad guys tipped their hand by doing that. They could have just left those other dudes alone and completely had the element of surprise.
Yeah.
Like, Schwarzenegger's daughter almost gets the drop on him in the opening credits.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was... I missed it. Lawrence Kasdan must have been trying to get my chicken fingers. I don't know if I'm breaking the fourth wall here.
Oh, no, I'm fine. She's a regular guest on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed more or less like that sequence was just to establish, like, these are really bad guys.
Yeah, and that seemed unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
they could have, I don't know, you gotta start the movie with explosions and people getting
killed
with bullet holes.
Yeah, like, once it started rolling, like, I had to think for a second, and it wasn't until I saw Bill Duke, who plays Cook, on the back of the garbage truck, that I was like, oh, no, okay, all right, this is the right movie.
Yeah,
because like I remember it opening essentially at like when he's chopping wood in the forest and he's carrying back that big log over his shoulder.
Yeah,
so yeah, it was weird. And then like, I don't understand why Bennett faked his death. That seemed unnecessary too. Because like we find out that he's dead, and it's revealed not very long after that he's alive. So it's very bizarre, the opening.
There's a lot of plot conveniences.
Yeah.
Like just that, oh, well, your whole team's been killed, now they're going to take you, and, oh, you know, Bennett escaped, but now he's, you know... It just seemed like there were little things that were just explained away. Obviously,
yeah.
Very brief points that I missed, so, I mean, You've seen this before, right?
Yeah, a couple of times.
You're familiar with it, and I mean, as a layperson new to action movies, it was those things were kind of lost on me.
Yeah, it's there's not a lot of depth to this movie.
No, there isn't. I don't want to make it seem like this is very complex.
And that's part of why I like it, because out of Schwarzenegger's action movies, like this one seems the most just like, look. No, you just want to. We're going to give Schwarzenegger a shitload of guns, and he's going to go to war on an island, basically. Yeah. And we finally get that. That last action sequence is great.
Yeah. The thing about it is, you know, I grew up playing like Wolfenstein 3D, mm-hmm. Bionic Commando, you know, Doom and stuff. And I like watch movies like this, and there's a couple other ones too, but it's so very obvious where they pull all their imagery from. Like when Schwarzenegger's going through the mansion. He looks like the guy in Wolfenstein 3D with those big, like, camouflage pants, no shirt, giant, like, Gatling gun.
M16 belt fed.
And, you know, that's where I think for this movie they were kind of like, people don't want plot, they just want to see explosions, and we're going to go full bore on that, and the plot's just going to be a secondary or sometimes tertiary.
And they absolutely do it. I think one of my only gripes with the movie, aside from just how worthless Bennett is, is that a couple of the other villains don't get nearly as much screen time. Primarily Bill Duke, who's a phenomenal actor. And David Patrick Kelly, who plays Sully, the guy that Stallone clearly drops the dummy off the cliff. Because David Patrick Kelly, like I was telling you during this, like his most notable role is Luther in the Warriors. And he's always playing those kinds of roles. So I get excited anytime I see him in a movie, and he's in this very briefly.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Cook having such a prominent role in the opening sequence of the film, I sort of was like, oh, this is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And then you didn't see him again until the hotel fight scene, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it included every single thing from the 80s possible. There was the glass block window that got destroyed when he pushed his head through it. Mm-hmm. I think there was a rotary telephone that got shot. There was, just awful decor in every single scene. And then they bust through the wall.
Yes.
And then there's the booby shot. There's like the obligatory like couple naked on the bed, and then they just sit there, blank face, watching as two men beat the shit out of each other in their own hotel room.
That couple who was making a sex tape.
Is that really?
There was a video camera set up on a tripod that I'd never noticed before. I was like, are they just making their own sex tape, or is this a porno? Because I don't see a director and a film mic guy. But it was a very nice looking camera for a couple to have. That's like L.A. quality.
It could have been they were in L.A. It could have been an audition tape. You never
know. Oh, yeah, that's very possible.
The thing I noticed kind of pushing off of that is that I'm so accustomed to all the conveniences of technology we have today, smartphones, computers, GPS. In this movie, it was really interesting because when Stallone was when they were in the mall, Schwarzenegger, and the guy recognizes him. He's like, give me that, and he pulls a quarter out of the woman's purse and runs to the phone booth to drop a quarter in to make a phone call to his boss, who's waiting on the other end with a rotary telephone. Yeah. And I'm like, it would have just been like
a text
or, you know, a phone call. And Schwarzenegger, I keep saying Stallone. Schwarzenegger, like, there were a couple times when he, like, was looking for a payphone. Like, everyone's always looking for a payphone, which seems very strange. And, like, they were in the cartography room, I guess. I guess that's what it was.
Yeah.
And he's like, there with a ruler, like, latitude 33, longitude 84, calculate. And then, you know, he's like, they're at this island somehow. He calculated, but, you know, now just be like, Google, okay, where are they? All right, okay. Well,
yeah, Google Maps says to go to this island. It will take 2.5 hours by plane. 8 hours if we swim. We can catch a bus.
Yeah, like, there's one of the things I love about this movie too. Like, there's very little brain work that Schwarzenegger ever does.
Right.
Almost every problem in the movie is solved by sheer strength. from flipping a car back up on to its side so he can drive it, to ripping a phone booth out of the wall so that David Patrick Kelly's character can't call them and let them know what's going on. He rips the siding off a warehouse at one point, like to sneak in.
He shook that David Patrick Kelly out of that phone booth, like shaking a bunch of chips out of a Pringles yes! tube. That's exactly what that was.
What was that, dude? He shoots, like, David Patrick Kelly shoots at him once, and then, like, there's like a good 5 seconds where, like, he just shits his pants in fear instead of just continuing to shoot at Schwarzenegger once he sees him advancing on the phone booth.
He hit the phone booth first, and I think what I saw, and I noticed this because I thought the same thing, his hand got thrown back, so I think he was just in panic mode because it was like he was in an earthquake. Now, you have to give it to David Patrick Kelly, though, because at the scene where the Porsche flips and Schwarzenegger rips him out of the car. He's like, tell me where the girl is. And he's like, I'm not telling you shit. He slams his ass. Yeah. Like, there's no cut shot. Like, he just slams his ass in his car.
No stunt double for David Patrick Kelly.
And never broke character once. Never once broke character. And I was like, he just got slammed by Schwarzenegger. And as we know, being confronted from the Franklin and Bash interview with Danny Stratton, getting confronted by a large man who is aggressive like Mike Tyson or Arnold Schwarzenegger, it got to be one of the most intimidating things.
Yeah.
And he took that like a champ.
Yeah, he did.
And, gosh, well, there was something else that was, a lot of the stuff he did with strength, but there was some small level of ingenuity to it. Like,
he finds the key to the hotel.
Right. I mean, there's some of those detective skills, his forensics training, I'm sure. And then also, but like, so he has to, he knows that they're on this island.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I have to invade this island because the woman that I'm with is not capable of shooting any type of projectile weapon, which she proves
wrong.
Proves him wrong shortly thereafter. But he's like, we need to go shopping. And I thought for real they're just gonna be like in a grocery store and he's gonna be plucking eggs and stuff and like getting milk and things like that. I got the fuel up. But he drives a bulldozer, like he gets to a surplus store that's protected, like the greatest pawn shop on the earth. I don't know where the bulldozer came from.
Yeah.
But he just drives a bulldozer and then he starts loading everything up like he knows exactly what he needs to invade a mountain mansion. So while there is some strength necessary, there's also a level of planning that is beyond you or me.
Absolutely. If
I were in a surplus store, I'd be like, I have no idea what weapons would be significant to
me. Guns, definitely, at least. Beyond that, I don't know.
I wouldn't know what ammo to put in to Kalashnikov. I'd be like,
you mean these shotgun shells don't work with the Uzi?
Exactly. I just grabbed the shotgun because that's the only thing I'm really familiar with shooting, you know? This will probably do it in 12 shells.
Yeah, you slide the little thing, make the scary noise, point the business end, you pull the trigger, go boom.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's what they teach you in gun safety courses. It's the textbook.
Click this thing, and then you pull the trigger, and it goes boom.
Yeah, click, click, boom. Just like that Saliva song.
Right.
It's just an instructional new metal song.
Yeah. For the Second Amendment generation.
One of the things that grinds on me about this movie is 80% of the time Radon Chong is on screen.
Really? I liked her. I thought she was endearing.
I like her when she's not screaming hysterically and trying to quit. Because, like, they clearly, like, wrote her in as the comic relief.
Sure.
And so much of what she says just falls flat for me. At one point, like, when they're driving, Schwarzenegger, like, clips the side of her car against something when they're chasing David Patrick Kelly. And she goes, oh, it's just not my dad. I was like, he just told you that his daughter was kidnapped by, like, his special unit. Like, and he has to go fight an army of dudes. Are you kidding right now? Like, have some perspective. But also, I understand, that's not her fault. That's how she was written. So, like, the feminist part of me is also like, oh, man, come on. Like, write her so she's not worthless. But then she does get, like, those little moments, like, where she blows up the paddy wagon to get Schwarzenegger out of police custody. But not before she fires it backwards, because she's a woman and she doesn't know how rocket launchers work.
Right, exactly. But you know, she did fly the plane.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a little bit of help from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
You know, going, we're not going to make it.
Yes, we are.
Slamming the gas now.
And she's so confident right before that. She's like, yeah, I got this. And then immediately screams, we're not going to make it.
Lucas, watch out for the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But she landed it. She landed it just fine.
Yeah.
But you know, I do think that in terms of comic relief, if you compare her to other comic relief roles in other action movies, it's definitely not... She's not the greatest comic relief.
She's not the worst, though, either.
She's not, but I think that Arnold Schwarzenegger's stoicness and his, like, stone faceness, because she'll say stuff, and then he'll just, like, scowl and just look at her.
Yeah.
Just turn to her really slowly, and it just gets really awkward, and which is what would happen in that scenario.
Yeah,
he's a very serious man trying to get his daughter back from an army of South Americans, mm-hmm. and you have this civilian who just gets dragged into it, and she's like, don't you know you have anger issues? And he's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, there are times, especially like in the plane, when they finally got the plane off, that she said something like, we made it, we did it, and it's like a huge achievement for her, and he's just like, I can't believe I'm stuck with this woman right now. which is accurate to the role, but I agree with you. I think they could have given her a little bit more, a little bit more, you know, even if it was so much as having her, you know, maybe come in near the end. I don't know if that's too cliche, where like the unexpected sidekick comes in and saves the daughter or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, and it's not uncommon, especially in movies like this, to have like a civilian sidekick or even like a civilian female sidekick. Case in point, like with Cobra, with Bridget Nielsen's character.
Sure.
So like it's certainly Running Man with Schwarzenegger does it as well. Terminator 2, although Sarah Connor, played by Linda Hamilton, is clearly like the opposite end of the spectrum as far as helpless like side characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, like I said, the feminist side, they could have given her a moment where she was smarter than Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
Or she was better than him. It always seemed like no matter what she did, she either did it wrong first or needed his help to like completely do it. Except landing the plane, but I mean, maybe we didn't see the scene where he was mansplaining.
No, don't put the gears down, land in water. No, too fast, too slow. Just give me the controls. What? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the other thing I also love is like, they just make her automatically maternal at the very end, too. When they're like when him and his daughter are walking away, like she just walks up and hugs her, like hugs little Alyssa Milano, who has never met this woman, who probably has been given no explanation in the 3 minutes since she saw her father murder a dude with a pipe, like has no idea who this woman is. She's standing by a plane. She's a pretty attractive lady, and she's hugging her all of a sudden.
Yes,
so, like that's.
I mean, at this point, though, if I were Alyssa Milano, if I were to see anybody except for Bennett.
Bennett in his mesh shirt.
If I were to see anybody after he was killed, I'd be just as happy as her.
Oh, that's true.
I'd be like, I'm going to hug this woman.
That's very true.
But the thing is, they never explained, there was never an explanation of who the girl's mother was there?
No, I just automatically assume, most movies like this, the mother, the person's either a widower or a divorce.
Right.
So I just assume. And that's the thing. It's like, it doesn't matter. You know, the mother's not in the picture. We get that. That's pretty obvious. It's just Schwarzenegger and his daughter living in their idyllic little cabin up in the mountains, you know.
It wasn't necessarily a cabin. It was like a mansion fortress.
Yeah.
And chopping down entire trees and carrying them back to the house. Well, you know what? What I'm glad they didn't do is try to shoehorn a love scene into it, like a love interest into it, because it'd be very easy for the writers to go, oh, well, he meets this civilian, and then they form, like, this bond, mm-hmm. and it could be kind of implied at the end, but they're not trying to, like, have a moment where, you know, there's some sort of romantic element to it, which a lot of other, like, even the new Godzilla movie, they try to shoehorn this like romantic thing in,
we don't care. Just show Godzilla pile driving monsters through buildings.
Right. Yeah.
That's all we want.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
know your audience.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Is like most, with the exception of the Terminator films,
mm-hmm.
most Schwarzenegger movies do have that love story shoehorned in. Like Running Man has it. It's like there's no reason for Running Man to have it. It's most dangerous game in the future with Richard Dawson hosting.
Yeah.
Like, Total Recall. don't need it, but it's there anyway.
Right.
So it's absolutely nice to see a movie like this where it's like, he probably goes home and, you know, he becomes a new mom. But we don't care about that. We just care about him blowing up dudes.
Yeah. I mean, which isn't to say that there shouldn't ever be an action movie with a romantic plot intertwined. It needs to be done
more naturally.
It needs to be done correctly. And when you try to, it becomes obvious. It becomes very apparent when it's juxtaposed with hundreds of people getting mowed down by a chain-fed machine gun.
Yeah.
That, like, this love story really was more of an afterthought. And I don't think that does fairness to either character, the female character or even the main character.
Yeah, absolutely.
It detracts. Yeah.
Well, it's like, that's what I love. One of my favorite things about the movie Speed is when... you've seen Speed, right? Keanu Reeves, the
bus. I'm familiar with it. I know enough references from the late night or mid 90s that I could probably tell you what happened.
Okay. Well, basically, in Speed, at one point, Keanu Reeves gets on the bus that has the bomb on it, and Sandra Bullock's on there. And Sandra Bullock even makes the comment that relationships started in, like, intense, like, adrenaline fueled kind of situations rarely last because they burn out.
Yeah.
So, of course, the movie ends with the two of them getting together.
Yeah.
But, like, I love that there's that, for at least a second, the movie kept its integrity and had that self-aware moment of kind of calling that trope out, even though it just completely gives into that trope by the end of the film.
Yeah. I liked, speaking of that, that's actually what I was thinking of, is at the very end of the movie, they do a fake setup for a sequel when he's like, this was my last time. He says, until the next time. And then it's like, you expect the credits to roll right then. Schwarzenegger looks at Radon Kwan and then looks back. And I don't know if in this time he's thinking, I don't want to have to deal with another woman like this again or another person like this. And then he looks back and says, not a chance.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's not going to be a sequel to this movie.
No Commando. The ink was already still fresh for him to do a Raw Deal or whatever the next one was. I'm trying to think of some other things that I wanted to hit on. There are some great one-liners in this movie.
Yes.
Some phenomenal ones. Just everything. Like, those moments is part of what saves this movie from, like, being just a very by-the-numbers, not fun action movie. And it's in that genre of, like, it's not what I would call a good movie. Like,
sure,
from a film, from, like, a story, like, in a film, like, it's not a P.T. Anderson, it's not There Will Be Blood or anything, but it's a fun movie. And it's because of those moments where, like, you know, he looks at David Patrick Kelly in the airport and says, you're a funny guy, Sully. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last. And like, just like kind of those little moments of levity that I feel like a lot of action movies now, like, everything is so stuck on being, like, gritty, and people think that gritty always means realistic, which it doesn't.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, they don't have fun with them anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, one of the only examples I can think of where that worked was Dredd, the recent Judge Dredd movie that came out with Carl Urban.
Okay.
And that makes sense because the character in the comics is very much like that.
Yeah.
But then you see other action movies, like the last couple of Schwarzenegger movies. Like, the action sequences are decent, but they're so, like, set on being so serious without having any kind of fun whatsoever that it's really hard to, like, get behind them, and the characters aren't likable and things like that, just because they're so obsessed with being gritty and dark.
Well, I mean, they're trying to add a lot of dimension and I think, you know, create an anti-hero, which, you know, maybe that's what society wants right now, but for me, watching action movies, being older and understanding, you know, film, understanding types of shots, actors, history, you know, watching just 1,000 people get riddled with bullets and then have Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, or, you know, just say, like, at the end where he's like, he stabs Bennett with the pipe and it's like this grotesque thing where the pipes impaled him into a boiler.
Yeah.
And the steam from the boiler coming out is just, let off some steam, Bennett. It's like these horrific moments and just these absurd, gratuitous acts of violence. The only way to, like, put them into perspective to be like, okay, this is all fantasy, is to have those one-liners.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, the point, my favorite with the David Patrick Kelly is where he's holding him. He says,
remember, Sully, remember when I tell you I was going to kill you last week? Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Well, I lied.
Drops him. So, you know, it's being older now, that to me is, you know, it's an essential element of these movies that bring that levity and that likability. Yeah. You know, because it helps you put the perspective into that this is all purely fantasy.
Yeah, well, that's why a character like John McClane works. Mm-hmm. Like, because he's a likable character, even though he's clearly an anti-hero. Like, he's kind of an everyman, and he's not, like, super... Well, up until recently, he's not, like, super cop. He's an average guy. But because he says stupid, funny things, like, and that kind of, like I said, makes it a little bit more relatable and kind of keeps you grounded and doesn't really let you get in that headspace of, like, processing that all these terrible things are happening, even though, like, it's a movie, like, it's fantasy and all that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with action movies now, I've seen clips from them or trailers. They're gruesome.
Yeah.
You know, this one, there's a lot of violence, but the violence is basically shots of Arnold Schwarzenegger turning, like, sort of rotating with a shooting a machine gun, and then, like, guys flipping, and, like, or falling down or shaking and just going or falling off a roof or something. But you never really see, like, with the exception of, like, one time, and even then it was kind of comical, nobody, like, gets their limbs blown off or head blown off or something like that.
That implied consequence.
Right, and it's kind of like those Jackie Chan movies where he just beats shoots a million people, and it seems like nobody ever really actually dies.
Yeah.
And so with this, I mean, there were a couple moments where, you know, where he shot the guy in the very beginning close up, like, right in the head. But even then, like, in a movie today, there would have been, like, his head would have exploded.
Yeah.
It would have been really like gruesome. CGI. I don't want to sound, like, really prudish or anything, but I think to push it to that level of grotesqueness was something that was considered, like you'd have to go to secret, like, stores, like, into their basement to get films that showed that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's pretty mainstream. And I think that kind of takes that levity of the action movie out of it when you make it so visceral.
Yeah. A perfect example of this, you compare a movie like Rambo First Blood, where one person dies that entire movie.
Yeah.
And then you look at the most recent Rambo from, like, 5 years ago, and there's a point, like, he disembowels people, like, with machetes, like, he cuts heads off. There's one point where he gets on an anti-aircraft gun and just turns it on, like, this Burmese army who are the villains, and you just see them get turned into paint, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, that alone in contrast to even the first Rambo.
Yeah.
It's bizarre that action movies have taken a jump to that point. Now, don't get me wrong, I enjoy my violence. It's fun. But at the same time, like, it's not even a prudish thing. It's just, at one point, like, when it gets too visceral, it's not fun anymore.
Right.
Then it's just, like, putting you on edge. And maybe that's the point. Maybe they're saying, hey, violence isn't cool.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I already know that, so just let me have my violence.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I'm trying to think, I think it was, like, Pan's Labyrinth. In the beginning of the movie, have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
I have not.
I
want to
make sure. My reference might be wrong, so all of you listening can comment on Facebook and correct me and call me out on it. But I think in the very beginning, there's this moment where these soldiers are getting confronted, and or these civilians are getting confronted by the soldiers. At any rate, there's this moment where the captain takes a wine bottle and bashes the guy's nose in, like, just right there, like, hammers his nose, and you can, like, see his nose flatten. It was, like, the most terrifying piece of violence. Like, and it was just so simple. It wasn't like someone needed to have their guts splinted.
Yeah.
But I think that when you have moments of visceral violence, use that as a punctuation point for the rest of the bizarreness that might happen in the movie, I think that's effective. But what seems now is they're taking that visceralness, that grotesqueness, and just saying, well, that's just how it is. Like in, like, the Star Wars prequels where, like, children are getting murdered.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like, what? Why?
Who was like, oh, no, this is still a fun, you know...
It's a kid's movie.
Fast and Loose franchise. Yeah, that's PG-13, but, you know, kids are murdered.
Right, with lightsabers or hacked to pieces.
All the younglings.
Yes. And that wasn't even an action movie. That was like a sci-fi
fantasy,
drama, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I liked about this movie is that as is true to all, I think, 80s action movies, is that the boss scene took place in like a boiler room.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was great. When they were down there, it looked like when Bennett was looking for John's daughter, it looked like Josh Gandy's basement. I don't know if you've ever been down there. I was down there once. And I was like, you could film a sweet boss scene down in Gandy's basement.
Wow.
It was old basement. I think he moved out.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, I was like, it took me right back to Cobra with the foundry scene where it's like, it's got to have like steam shooting off like from unknown places. And then like fire came out at one point. Mm-hmm. And it was, there was that, there was the sleazy motel, there was the pawn shop, there was the mall.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was incredible. It looked like City Center. Mm-hmm. Were you ever at City Center back in the day here in Columbus? It looked exactly like that.
Okay.
Like that open courtyard with the elevator with the windows that came down. And it was like I was back in the early 90s in Central Columbus going to City Center. And that's what I get a kick out of with all these old films is that they're very much, well, we need to put this in contemporary terms with the times.
Yeah.
And so the things you see are very much indicative of the early 80s.
Yeah.
Getting attacked in parking garages, of course.
Yeah, yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Yeah, that's definitely, that's the thing that came to prominence in the 80s, like with these movies.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you'll still see it every now and then, like in horror films and stuff, But yeah, action movies for a long time kind of had the monopoly on parking garage scenes.
Yeah, it's always the woman going to her car by herself,
mm-hmm.
and it's like maybe the middle of the day, and then by the time she gets to her car, it's like pitch black, and it's the only car in the garage.
Of course.
And then, of course, like a van rolls up.
Or, yep.
In this case, it was a yellow Porsche.
Yep.
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger just comes and rips your front seat out.
Yeah.
You take me to follow him.
Which, totally unnecessary, because even him sitting on the floor, he was practically at her height, too. It's like, you could have just reclined the seat all the way
right.
back. Like, there's
or just
no
put
reason.
The hood up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's no reason to destroy her car.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think this was, to me, this was a fun movie, and one that I would probably watch again.
Yeah, it's one that I come back to probably every year or two.
Yeah.
Typically with the purpose of introducing it to somebody who's never seen it.
Yeah.
Because it's always fun to see people's first reactions watching, especially something like this.
Yeah. And there are those moments in between, you know, like those one-liners and stuff like that keep it from getting dull.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times when I'll be sitting through a movie and, you know, the they'll go down a road that isn't necessary and I'll find myself checking my watch or like, well, what's thinking about something else. With this movie, anytime there would be a slight lull, generally there'd be something funny said or an explosion would occur,
mm-hmm.
and my attention would be immediately drawn back into it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as crappy of a movie as it is, it does have that rewatchability.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very fun movie. I honestly am surprised that I don't own this shit still. Like, it's...
You know what?
I was very surprised that I didn't own it. Because, like, when I initially talked to you about doing this... I assumed that I had picked it up at some point.
Yeah.
I have not. So we rented it on Amazon.
Yeah, well, you know, now we know what to get you for Christmas. Yeah. Christmas and actually July's past, but
hey, that's all right. I'll hold off on buying Commando.
Is Arbor Day coming up or is that in spring?
Arbor Day is in fall, I believe.
Okay, well maybe an Arbor Day or Labor Day present, you'll get Commando.
That's all right, you heard it, listeners. what I'd like to do to wrap up, like to talk about your favorite moment. Do yours and I'll do mine.
Oh, gosh.
I know there's so many to choose from.
There are. I think one of my favorite moments, it was probably the whole fight scene with is David Patrick Harris, is that his name?
David Patrick Kelly.
I'm like thinking Neil Patrick Harris. David Patrick Kelly, where he confronts him in the mall, fights off a whole army of cops. It's like there's one police officer, and then they come up to him. Schwarzenegger fights him off, and then the next thing you know, there's like 20 cops converging on Schwarzenegger. Does this thing where they're all piled on top, throws them all up like in a cartoon or something. And then he shakes David Patrick Kelly out of the phone booth. They have a long car chase. He slams him against the Porsche, dangles him by his ankle with one arm over a ledge, and delivers the line, "Remember when I said I'd killed you last? I lied." And that was the beautiful end. Oh. The body plummeting into the gorge, yeah, of that extended, over-the-top action scene.
That's definitely up there for me as well. I have two. One's a very quick moment, and it's when Schwarzenegger's at the compound at the very end, when he pops up from behind the corner, gets the guard's attention, and says, "Como esta?"
Yeah.
And then shoots him with a ballistic spring-loaded knife. Which is, like, it's one of the greatest, like, because he generally asks, he's like, "Hey, how's it going?" Also, knife.
Yeah.
My other one, like, my bigger moment, is the fight scene in the motel with Bill Duke's character.
Yes, that was great.
That's, I'm a sucker for interestingly done fight scenes, and especially because, like, they quit back and forth a couple of times. Like, Bill Duke says, "This Green Beret is going to kick your ass, motherfucker." Schwarzenegger just responds, "I eat Green Berets for breakfast, and right now I'm very hungry." And then, like, crashes his hand, punches Bill Duke in the face with his own hand, and then, like, keeps kicking him around. And then, like, they have that great exchange at the very beginning. Then Bill Duke goes to shoot him, says, "Fuck you, asshole," right before he pulls the trigger, out of bullets. Schwarzenegger's retort, "Fuck you, asshole." It's like, what? Come on, you had that entire fight to think of something better for this moment. And then Schwarzenegger kicks him through the door, the couple fucking... And the couple never runs out. Like, they just stay there, just watching. Everybody in this movie just watches violence
right.
happen. Like, the couple there, all the people in the mall, "Oh, there's gunshots. Schwarzenegger, this big dude just threw 80 cops. Oh, my dad's fighting this dude with a knife. I better watch this, too." Like, nobody runs and gets away from the violence. Everybody's just drawn to it.
Yeah.
So that's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
What did he impale him on?
I assume it was like a... Oh, it was probably... Well, no, because the door would have fallen in the other room.
80s decoration.
It was a broken something or other. Maybe a table that, like, they got smashed. Something.
That's possible. I didn't know what it was. Whenever I see someone get impaled, I just assume it's the American flag.
Oh, should have been for Bill Duke.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Usually, like, in scenes like that, there's, like, you get a quick shot of it, like, because that's the film's way of telling you, this is going to come into play here
right.
in a second. And you don't get that during that fight scene. At no point is it like, uh-oh, there's a couple of sharp objects laying around. And it's a total surprise to everyone when it's like, oh, I guess there was something in there for him to get impaled on when Schwarzenegger kicked him through the doorway.
What I wonder is, what did that couple in the other room do after he left Cook?
Yeah.
Impaled, like... They just go back to doing it?
Do they
do it next to the body? Like, it's some sort of weird, like, fetish thing? I don't know.
I would hope that they finished and then called the cops. That would have been the responsible thing to do.
I think so.
Because, you know, it's you want to take care of your needs, but then you also want to do your civic duty.
That body will always be there. Whether you call the cops now or in 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. That body ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
Might as well finish. He gave you a nut. Cool. I think we're going to wrap there. Matt Munth, thank you very much for coming on and doing the podcast.
Sure thing. Thank you.
No problem. I'll definitely get you back again in the future. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Join us next time on the podcast as the tables are turned and Chris Cohen introduces me to the film Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, like the page on Facebook, send any questions or comments for the show to howhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhaveyouhave Goose Creative at 8 o'clock in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.